You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 26 August, we've got Stadio and Advitech results due today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Gary Boyson, Rand Swiss, Rich Reed says he likes in assuming a falling interest rate environment. Pietri Radin has Serena Capital Advisors, the Rand. Can it move stronger? Certainly that US dollar index is at support. What is the short-term target? Mvelo Khlophe, he from Zayo, challenges of being an interest. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from Forbes. Stocks rally as Powell signals Fed pivot at Jackson Hole address. The eight words were, the time has come for policy to adjust. Business day, gold price boom finds Goldfield napping as South Deep falters. Company expects full year output to be its lowest in more than a decade. Man, when the price is high, you've got to produce. Morning markets, US was green, S&P and NASDAQ 1.2% higher. East, mostly green, Sydney up 0.2%. Tokyo's red at down 1.1. Hong Kong's up 1% and Tencent up 1.3%. Commodities green, gold $2,547, Brent $79.51, platinum $9.67, palladium $9.49, rand $17.72, Bitcoin $64,100, and top 40 opening call red open 38 points or 0.05% to the downside.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning time. As I said in the intro there, Powell said the magic words. All indications are rate cuts for September. It seems like they might start slow, 0.25%, but that's fine. They've got wiggle room to accelerate that. In light of rates coming down, what about the REIT space? Is there, what stocks would you be looking at? Which REITs would be potentially on your radar as we locally and globally head into lower interest rates?
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember, I think at the moment, you know, if you look at it, there's more than 100% chance that we're going to get an interest rate cut from the Fed in September. And you know, there's kind of whispers that it might be as large as 0.5%, which is going to be massive. And, you know, it does definitely bring up the question of are REITs now a place to start looking at, or should you have been looking at them already? Because, you know, as we get, you know, falling interest rates and fixed income products become less attractive on a relative basis, REITs become more attractive. You know, the rental yields become more secure, and they can actually deliver yields, you know, when it gets a little bit more tricky and you don't maybe want, you know, pure equity exposure, you're looking for a little bit of a diversification. Of course, borrowing costs coming down, also good for property. And you know, you see asset values increasing as occupancies improve, rental income improves, and you just get that overall demand picking up. So, Where do we look? I suppose a nice way to look at it is just the top-down analysis. So, you know, if we look at the underlying sectors, you've got residential, office, retail, industrial, specialty, data centers, all sorts of can invest in. And for us, I think in the beginning of the cycle, where you really want to look at is industrial, retail, and if you can get it residential as well. So office and commercial, I think there's still an issue there. We've seen a structural change to that segment, specifically around work from home. You've seen anything that's really had office linked to it really underperforming, you know, through the COVID period. But then there's also the speciality REITs, which we really like, things that just do something a little bit different, that run businesses rather than just collect rentals from properties. So, you know, their self-storage, we've liked storage for a long time. And, you know, I've had a look at the total returns of you know, kind of the JSE listed REITs. There's actually 46 listed JSE REITs. But, you know, I'll screen out anything that doesn't form part of the all share index. So kind of look at the bigger ones. And if you look at something like, you know, storage, I mean, massively outperformed, you know, the South Africa listed property index in total return terms. So including all those distributions that REITs have to pay out, up around 21%, something like storage up 63% in total return over the last 5-year period. the other REITs that really have stood out is the likes of Spear REIT, which is of course Western Cape Property. You know, that also massively outperforming the index over the last 5 years, up around 70% in total return terms. And then something like Vukile as well, which is just retail focused, which I think is one of those segments that you've got to look at. Incredible occupancy rates and you know, also having performed well over the last 5 years, up almost 60% in total return terms.
And you mentioned them, I mean, they've run hard, but of course, off massively low bases. And we must remember the REIT market actually peaked ahead of pandemic. This was late 17, early 18. They've run hard, but I like your point. They've got good yields here. And as I suddenly can't get that yield in bonds or the bank, REITs become my option.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, if you look at them, even if you look at something like the more traditional diversified, so the big guys, you know, the likes of Grosspoint and Redefine, I mean, you're still looking at around a 9% yield. And as I said, those yields become more stable as interest rates fall and as economic activity picks up. You know, you look at those two, you know, I think the real concern for us, I mean, you get a nice diversified spread. So if you look at it, you know, retail in Grosspoint is kind of 40% of their book, but they've still got 38% in office, about 20% in industrial. Redefine, on the other hand, 35% retail, 30% in office. Office exposure slightly lower. They also strip out the international component, so the international makes up around 20% of their business. But you know, if you look at those two, very underperformance compared to the rest of the sector. So in total return terms over the last 5 years, pretty much has done nothing, you know, slightly negative on each one. But as you see the interest, I think, in the sector returning, that could be your opportunity if you're concerned around something that's run a little hard. For us, just a little bit of concern around the office exposure, but definitely something I think will pick up. And it also comes down, of course, to the relative pricing. But you know, looking across these as well, you know, if you look specifically at the borrowing costs, typically a lot of these have long-term leases and they don't adjust as quickly as people may think. But at the same time, it's something that you have to consider. But all of these, the REITs that we've talked about today and anything in the top 40, I mean, you're looking at normally a loan-to-value ratio of around, call it between 30 and 50%. So nothing exceptionally leveraged in here if you're looking really to take advantage of lower interest rates. But again, I think rather than trying to just take advantage of interest rates, you've got to look at the underlying company, see what it does. Why we like storage, it does well in rising and falling markets, great brand. And maybe if you want to look overseas, one of our overseas REIT picks is something like Equinix, which is an absolute massive REIT that invests in data centers. And if I look at that over a total return period, I mean, you're looking in RAND terms, even with the stronger currency that we've experienced over the last couple of months, still up, you know, even at 17.70 to the dollar, still up around 90% in total return terms. So still outperforming anything we have on the local exchange.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Gary Boyson, RAND Swiss. Always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our question today. LinkedIn and Twitter. We're chatting with Gary, his preferred REIT. So you're buying, maybe you've already got, have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Petri Oudenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, I appreciate the early morning time. Very early this morning when I woke up, RAND was 17.66. It slipped down to 17.74, looking strong, although that only takes us back to July of last year. My question to you is, what's your target on the RAND in particular? Because I'm looking at the dollar index, the DXY, and that is like smack on support that has been holding more or less since beginning of last year. Where are you looking for the RAND? What are your sort of short-term targets on the currency?
All right, short-term. I'm so glad you said that. Good morning, Simon. because it's such an open-ended, you know, what's your target for the RAND? I don't know. Well, how long is a piece of string? I think the last time you and I spoke about the RAND, we spoke about the good old-fashioned, very boring 200-day moving average. Yep. Now the RAND is actually below that for the first time in a while. And if we look at you know, the type of movements that the Rand makes after it breaks beneath this 200-day moving average, it strengthens around, I guess, around 10%, depending if you, how you measure it. If you move it from moving average to crush to moving average crush, that's around 10%. If you move it from peak to trough, then obviously it's considerably more, right? But it's interesting to sort of follow the breakout here. So we had a big range between 19 Rand 20 and 18 Rand 12, you know, give or take those levels around about. We've broken below that 18-12 support, and we've broken underneath the 200-day moving average. So those things are indicating to us that the at least call it medium, short to medium term trend would be one of a strengthening Rand. And the setup that we see now, for example, last week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Rand weakened, got close to one of the shorter term moving averages being a 20-day moving average, got rejected there and strengthened like mad on Friday, right? Okay, that's maybe on the back of some economic data from the US, expectations of interest rate cuts, all the rest of that stuff. But that narrative, you know, changes very slowly, therefore sticks around for quite some time. So I think that this strengthening trend is here to stay. And as a, I guess, short-term target, you could probably say 16 Rand 82 would be the first target for the Rand. Right now, it's kind of entered into a support period. As you said, in July last year, it was down here, but only for like 3 or 4 days, right? So this might be a little bit of support in this area, but between sort of 1743 and 1770, in that area might be a little bit of support. But I think once we're clear of this, 1682 opens up, potentially even stronger, depending on, you know, how strong the wind blows behind its back.
Okay, 1682. That's the one. And the DXY. I mean, I'd look at that. Am I overcomplicating my life when I start looking at the dollar index as well?
No, I don't think so. I think the DXY is a very good indication to look at if you are, or a very good thing to look at if you're looking for some sort of, you know, directionality on commodities, right?
Okay.
And also, I think it goes this way, the realm of conspiracy. You know, the end of the dollarization of the world might be coming to an end, right? We've been trading oil and all other commodities in dollars forever. Not forever, but for a very long time. And a lot of those agreements have sort of come to an end. So I guess we wait and see, you know, how fast the Saudis move away from a dollar-based oil, for example. And if that changes, the dollar index will continue to weaken. And I don't know, it'll be an interesting... So I think it's worth keeping an eye on, and it's a good leading indicator for a lot of the commodities. So we've seen the dollar index strengthening quite a bit, and the commodity price is softening on the back of that.
Yeah, I take your point. And it's just a case of as well. I mean, if nothing else, you know, suddenly rates are down. Well, those 10-year yields are now, what, sub 4% in the U.S.? So your money's got to go find a home somewhere else. Peter Enhase, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with J.P. Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Mvelo Khlopi, he's CEO at Zio. Mvelo, appreciate the time today. When you were a student at UCT, if I'm correct there, you stumbled across one of the classic challenges that a new entrant into the job world has. You are a graduate, you've got a degree, and you apply for a job, and they say, we love you, we love your CV, but you don't have any training experience, you don't have any work experience, which is a problem as old as time. But you came up with a cunning way to actually try and solve this.
Yes. So I mean, as you say, one of my friends, you know, we're sitting at the cafeteria and then we had that discussion. So he was looking to get a job at one of the big tech companies. I mean, had great marks and everything, but it was a practical experience that was the hindrance. So what we wanted to do was upskill our peers in a similar situation as him and then place them on real world projects. So then they were able to not only gain the practical experience, but also earn at the same time. And pretty much that's how the story of Zaya started.
And that really was just a case of taking the graduates and putting them up with startups. Startups need some coders, some people who can assist them. And it really was sort of the cliched hand in glove in a sense.
Exactly. So for the startups, they obviously got talent that was at a far reduced rate.
Mm.
And then for the talent that we had on the platform, they got to earn, but also get that practical experience that is much needed when getting a job.
Yeah, I want to touch in a moment around how the business model has shifted a bit, but some of the challenges. I mean, did you have to raise capital for this? Because that's another thing as a startup. Raising capital, you know, it's glamorous in the movies, but it can be hard in real life.
Oh, no, you have to speak to multiple investors, getting that no all the time. It really does dampen your spirit as well. I mean, luckily, we were able to then access a bit of grant funding. So we entered quite a few competitions, pitching competitions. Mm. So it would, you know, get us to, I guess, the next step every now and then. Eventually, we did raise from an angel investor, which then helped us to accelerate. But even then, you'd assume all your problems disappear, but you then have to go fundraising again, right? And then you just have to go through the cycle again. So yeah, it is a daunting task. It is time consuming and it's not an easy one at all. You can really never be prepared, especially when you're doing it for the first time as a first time founder.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got skill sets and one of them was not raising capital. The other challenge, and I've had some startups, you sit in a situation where you have a business or startup that's doing quite well. It's hitting targets. It's doing great. But you don't actually have enough money in the bank to pay salaries. I mean, it is immensely tough from so many different angles that I think someone who hasn't been there oftentimes can't comprehend.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely experienced that. I mean, I remember, especially during COVID, money was coming in very slow because companies just weren't spending. Mm. And I mean, it did inform our pivot later on. But I personally had to move home. The founding team had to move home. We just didn't have money. We couldn't pay for ourselves in terms of salaries. So that's a problem I'm really familiar with.
Yeah, it is. And it just feels so disconnected. And on the one side, the metrics are great. On the other side, they're not. You mentioned the pivot there because you have made a slight change. And that's another part of businesses is that as you kind of refine it, you sort of new doors open and stuff. And often where you end up, even just a year or two down the line, is not that initial conversation that you had in the cafeteria with your friend. It's something completely different as you sort of took on new avenues and new challenges.
Yeah, so naturally, we, you know, in dealing with all these startups that we were servicing, there was a huge mismatch between the skill sets of the talent that we had on the platform based on what they were studying at the institutions that they were studying at versus what was required from, you know, by the company. So we then realized that let's fix that gap. Let's fix this mismatch of skills. And in doing that, we realized that there's a much larger market and a much greater impact that we could make. And then that's when we started focusing solely on edtech. And I mean, that's what we do now. We do boot camps every 2 months on software engineering, soon data science and cybersecurity and cloud. But that's where we now find ourselves, where we're upskilling learners, placing them on jobs, and then amplifying the impact that we first started.
Did you always want to be an entrepreneur? I mean, obviously, you know, you were studying computer science, and I use that term very, very broadly, but that's what you were studying. It's what you're still doing, right? It's what the business does. But of course, now you're the entrepreneur. Was there always a sense in you that you wanted to be an entrepreneur, or are you perhaps an accidental entrepreneur?
I'd say accidental. I was definitely far from being an entrepreneur. So I actually studied politics, philosophy, and economics, but okay. You know, I found myself in tech. So, I mean, I think that goes to show that if you really have an interest in something and you have a creative mind, you can really bring, you know, almost anything into life. I mean, just with my background as well, you know, I'm born to teachers. Mm-hmm. There was no entrepreneurial spirit or no entrepreneurial vein really in me before this, but you know, in the spirit of solving challenges and then, you know, looking to monetize them, that's really what we did, and that's how I got into this journey of entrepreneurship.
I take your point. I mean, ultimately, that's what an entrepreneurship is. It's almost product independent. It is around that solving challenges and almost the thrill of it, of meeting the challenge and finding the solution and then executing. Are you bitten? Are you now an entrepreneur? I mean, is this something that you look at and you think, this actually is really, really tough. The rewards are often not that great, but it's something that you're going to stick with.
No, definitely. And I think that's the best explanation of it. The odds are never great. But, you know, I think now I do have the grit and the discipline to be able to do this for a lot longer. I mean, I think maybe even the next challenge that comes to me, I probably would approach it as well in the same way. And I guess that's the career then I've carved for myself.
I'm Willich Lopez, CEO of Zaya. All the best and appreciate the time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Martin Ackerman from Citadel on Friday, talking local inflation potential for September rate cuts. We asked you if the MPC will cut next month. 60% said yes, 0.25%. A third said he must do 0.5%. The rest said, nope, we're going to see another hold. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole, Masekla and Siren. To you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. It's a towel. Results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.